This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. A student-built simulation at one of Michigan's universities shows just why our college campuses have been so particularly prone to the rapid spread of COVID-19 and why quick COVID testing is so important to finding and isolating infected individuals. The hypothesis is that the spread would be much faster than predicted by other models. With us to explain the Michigan Technological University model is Cécile Piret, Associate Professor of Mathematical Sciences at Michigan Tech. Cécile, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Was there an obvious mathematical plan of attack for this kind of question?
So let me tell you a little bit about, as a teacher of mathematics, for me it's very important to see what how mathematics is explained in the media and the mass vulgarization videos and things, and whether they're accurate or not. And there was a video in particular in the Washington Post that got my attention. And it was a little simulation with a bunch of little particles that represented people. And they were moving randomly. And there was one little red dot in the middle. And that was the infected person. So all of them were black except for that little red dot. When the little red dot got close enough to one of the black dots, then that one became red also. And then that one then became contagious and, of course, carrying the disease. And then the spread would start like that outward. And it was a little simulation to show the importance of social distancing.
And did you take issue with that visualization?
Yes,
did you think
because
it oversimplified?
Because at the same, in the same vein as you know, the common models that we went through in my modeling class this spring, there is something fundamentally missing from the way that people understand or that the disease is explained mathematically. And that is the human behavior. So let me give you an example. So say that I am contagious with the disease, but I don't know it. I'm asymptomatic. So I, you know, wake up, I eat with my family, and I might infect people in my family. Then I go to work, right? And I teach students, right? So I'm going to be in contact with a bunch of students, and I might infect some of them. And then after that, I go to, say, the store, right? After work, I go to a store, I'm going to go see, you know, maybe I see a friend there and I might infect somebody. Well, each one of these people that I have met in a different network, so in my family network, in my job network, and in my social network, each one of these people also have a family network, a job network, and a social network.
So it's not as if there is merely one path for vectors to travel for each infected person, but many vectors to spread it.
Exactly.
So you and your students got busy, your undergraduate students got busy on this model. Was there a difference then between the kind of mathematical model that you would build for, say, a college campus and one that predicts any other kind of community spread?
Yes. So that's exactly what we found. We found that, social distancing, of course, is very important, that the wearing a mask is very important. But what we really saw in this model is that the number of networks that everybody has is so important in the spread, in the speed of the spread. So for instance, what we did is we assumed, okay, we have a city and we have a closed city, right? There's no outside of that city. And each person in that city has three networks: a family network, a job network, and a social network. And then they interact, right? They go to work, and so there are tons of parameters. And in fact, you know, we get a little bit crazy and we use US demographics and so we made it as accurate as possible according to the data that we had. And we saw that the more networks we have, and the faster the illness is, right? So if we have three networks, the disease spreads fast. If we have four networks or five networks, it starts to spread way faster. And that, you know, I mean, that's common knowledge, right? It's not rocket science to think about that. The more people you see in a day, so the more population shuffles there is.
Right.
Because basically when you change network, it's as if the population was shuffling. So the more shuffles there is, and the faster the spread is.
We should emphasize that you and your students devised this model before there was the real-life example of college campuses all over Michigan in session. How close was the model to what has happened so far?
Oh, it's right on. I mean, so of course, you know, we did something quite simple, and what we wanted was to get the trend correct, right? We wanted to study the trend of what was going to happen. So basically what our model showed was the more population shuffling, I'm going to call it, the faster it is. And so what is an environment where there's the most amount of shuffling? Well, it turns out it's the U.S. College campus. So I'm saying U.S. college campus because, you know, in other parts of the world, it's not like that. People, the schools are in cohorts. So you follow your student colleagues all day long, right? The same ones. In the U.S., it's not like that. You have student colleagues at 8 a.m. and then at 9 a.m., you have completely a different set of student colleagues. And then at the next hour, again, a new set of colleagues and et cetera, et cetera. And so throughout the day, the population shuffles constantly every hour.
So what did this suggest to you that might be helpful with infection prevention?
So yes, exactly. So the consequence of that is that, yes, the social distancing is crucial. The wearing a mask is crucial, but the number of shuffles is crucial as well. And in fact, so what we did is that we put in our model the parameters of the reopening committees we're going to do, for example, in our university. So less students per class and social distancing and wearing a mask. And we decided to run those simulations to see if the spread was still going to happen. And we found out that, yes, it does. Because of the number of shuffling that occurs, the spread still happens. Now it takes longer for it to happen, but it does still happen. And of course, it's overwhelmed by the college parties and the all of that.
I heard that you reached out to the president of Michigan Tech, Richard Kubek, to let him know what you'd found and maybe what could be done differently. What did you recommend to him?
So what we found out in the class is that, so one tool that we have when we have a good testing system is that we can do a track and test. It's very, very important in order to stop a spread. But because of this population shuffling again, the tracking and tracing is again messed up, right? Because if you wait long enough, so if you only have your results of your test after 2 days, well, you have been in contact with nearly the entire college population and all of them have to be quarantined. I mean, I'm totally exaggerating here, but the shuffling of the population makes it really difficult, of course, also to track and trace. So what we, you know, one idea that we had and that we proposed was to have cohorts or bubbles. And so we would subdivide the student population into small groups, and those groups would live together and would take the same classes together. And that way, the tracing would be very easy, because if one person got infected, well, we knew which other ones had to be in quarantine because, well, those are the members of that bubble. But so that's what we proposed. But the problem, and I'm sure it's the case with every university, logistically it's a nightmare to organize that kind of stuff. And then what I heard also, an argument that I heard also, is that legally, you know, there's an issue as to whether you can force students to not see other people. I don't know. Some people might think it's an issue, but what do I know?
Cécile Perret is an associate professor of mathematical sciences at Michigan Tech University. Cécile, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.